Mitzvah Kuf Samech Beis 162, Shelo Leachol Sheretz Haaretz, not to eat creepy things that crawl on the ground. Shelo Leachol Sheretz Haaretz, Sheneemar V'chol HaSheretz HaShereitz Al Haaretz, Sheketz Hu Lo Yeachel, it's disgusting, you shouldn't eat it. Mishor Shemitzvah Zo, Im Kol Mashe Ba Be'Isser HaMachol, Eskoy Kesavti Lamala, Mashe Yodati, Ein Tzorech Lachzero Be'chol Eis, it's part of the regular rubric of Kashrus. Bidini ha-mitzvah, kegona chiluk shechalku zichronim l'racha b'shmona shratzim ha-amurim b'torah mishar shratzim. So we know that there's an ish difference in terms of tumah and tara, in terms of ritual purity and impurity, by the eight types of species that are listed in the Torah, explicitly. So in terms of the other shratzim, which are nechashim and akrabim, chipushes, v'nadal, v'chayotzibahem, so snakes, scorpions, beetles, centipedes, other disgusting things. Shamro Shishmona Shratzim Hamur Betorah Shir Chiyuv Achilasan Kishir Tumasan Shu Hika Adasha, which is very unusual. What's a normal shir in terms of eating something to be liable to the penalty of lashes? How much do you have to eat? Kizayas. But these, the eight ones that are mentioned explicitly, Hachomet, Vehatzav, etc., etc. So if you eat those, what's the shir that they have in terms of being, conveying tuma, their shear is ka'adasha, which is the size of a lentil, which is much smaller than an olive. So that it carries over to eating also. If you eat a lentil's bulk of one of the eight explicitly mentioned types of species, so you're chayiv and not just the kezias. The shear ha'achirim b'chazayis, but any other any other type of creepy creature, so the shear like normal is a kezias. V'chol shear in halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. I'll explain the Maseches Chulin that these things are these shiurim, the kezayis, etc. It says in the Gemara in Erevin that this is all halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. It's a received tradition as to these shiurim. Obviously, it doesn't say kezayis anywhere explicitly in the Torah. The Gemara over there tries to derive it from the pasuk where it talks about Eretz Chitau Sarah v'Gefen u'Sinav from Eretz Zeishemen. It talks about the seven species with which Eretz Yisrael was blessed. So it says, so one of the, since the Zayas is mentioned over there, so you measure by the Zayas. Ultimately, the conclusion of the Gemara is that it's just a received tradition, and that there's no explicit source in the Torah for it. And we're going to discuss a little bit more in the next mitzvah, that one place that the shear doesn't apply is that if you eat a whole creature, so let's say you eat an entire ant, and if it's not a kizayas, much less than a kizayas, obviously, an ant is tiny. So if you eat a whole ant, then you're liable to the penalty of Malkus, even if it's... even if it's less than a... even if it's less than Kizayis. But if it's whole, then it's even when it's much less than Kizayis. So we'll discuss more about that in the next mitzvah. Males and females. If you eat any of these creepy things that crawl on the ground, these are bugs. The mazed loke, the machal mishmona shratzim, a filbach kadasha loke. Again, the same thing about the eight types of species. When it's the size of a lentil, you receive the penalty of lashes, b'shogig putter, and of course, you're exempt from the penalty of lashes when. So mitzvah kuf samach gimel, which is going to get into more details. Mitzvah 163. Shelo lechol minei shratzim dakim hanoladim bizraim uvaperos. So we shouldn't eat little creepy creatures that grow in seeds, planted things, and fruits. Shelo lechol minei shratzim dakim hanoladim bizraim uvaperos mei shiyatzu v'yishritzu ba'aretz. So you have animal, little bugs that are born, that the eggs are laid inside a fruit, for example, and they might not stay in the fruit. They might decide to go out of the fruit and start walking on the ground. So even though they're not like beetles that live in the ground, they really live in fruits, but still they might start walking on the ground. And we're going to discuss, I believe, in the next mitzvah, is talking a little bit about there's a machlokas about how to count all these mitzvahs with all the creepy, crawly creatures. But again, we follow the Rambam, of course, in terms of the practical count in Sefer HaChinuch. And still, when the fruit is still attached to the ground, so when the egg hatches inside the fruit, so it's considered to be walking on the ground because the fruit is attached to the ground. So on fruit, which is attached to the ground, is considered like the ground itself. So let's say you have a tomato on the vine. So it didn't necessarily leave the tomato to walk on the vine or on the ground next to the tomato. But nevertheless, since the tomato is considered part of the ground, so since it walked on the tomato, then it is no good. So it's still called walking on the, it creeps on the ground. So let's say, for example, the tomato has been picked already, and then and only then does the microscopic egg hatch inside the tomato. Then it walks on the ground that goes back into the fruit. So it's still called Sharetz al Haaretz, even though it was born in the fruit after it was detached from the ground already. The halachic medrash says that do not defile your souls with all the creepy things that crawl. You might think. So let's say, the Sifra is teaching us that if it was born inside the fruit while it was detached from the ground already, then it went out and then it went back in, even though it's still in the exact same place in which it was born, by the time you're eating the fruit, it's still forbidden because it had left the fruit at some time. Whereas, of course, the implication being that if there was a insect that was born inside the fruit and it never left inside the fruit, as he's going to say explicitly in a minute, then that is permitted, actually. That's permissible to eat that insect, of course.
But you'll never know if it left and came back.
No, you could tell. Maybe there's no hole or something. You can tell it was still there the whole time. So, of course, these rules are probably based on the belief in spontaneous generation, because in the 2,000 years ago, everybody believed that these insects just appeared. They were spontaneously created from the flesh of the fruit themselves.
The Rambam believed that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Until Pasteur proved
Hold on.
Yishmeyayin? That's
not a. No, not Yishmeyayin. The flesh of the fruit converted into bugs. Or the flesh of, as we'll see, there are other things. There are fish and things like that, animals that
lice, famously.
Yeah, the Gemara says that you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos because they're not really alive, because they don't, they're not born by sexual reproduction.
They're not?
I mean, they are, really. But, anyway, so, but.
Did we pass him like that, or no, because you know better?
So that's a huge machlokes, that Rabbi Slifkin, that's a huge machlokes as to whether, according to most authorities, that it doesn't mean literally that the halacha is predicated on the idea of spontaneous generation. It just means the halacha is the halacha. These were the reasons that Chazal gave. But now that we know differently, we can reinterpret it to mean that since the eggs that were laid in the fruit were really microscopic and they didn't have a halachic significance until the animal hatched, so it's considered to be derived from the fruit, as opposed to it was never Shoretz al Haaretz. This animal is never Shoretz al Haaretz, yeah.
So the eggs are microscopic.
That's the truth. That's a big. There have been rabbis over the years who said that since now we know that these are not created through spontaneous generation, that we should be stringent and we consider it. We revise the halacha, but that's not the normative view of the poskim, as we shall discuss a little bit more later, and that creates a lot of problems. It got a lot of chumras that way.
Did they know that lice cause disease?
An interesting Chazonish that I saw quoted, which the Chazonish says that these rules should not trump the principle of hayotze min hatame tame, that when a non-kosher animal lays an egg, for example, or gives milk, then that milk is still prohibited because the principle of something that's derived from a non-kosher species is itself not kosher. So he says, it comes from an egg from a non-kosher sheretz, which is obviously in order to, for the sheretz, the bug, to lay the egg inside the fruit, and it had to crawl on the ground at some point. It wasn't going to be not generations of bugs that have their entire lifespan inside fruits. So that should be a problem, since now we know about the eggs. But it's not, it's not the normally accepted opinion that these are absolute. The halacha is true. The reasons behind it, we can discuss, we can reinterpret it. Okay, that's a different question, yeah. B'zeh perush shani kosev b'chan, ki chiyuv mine hashratzim dakim hume'eish yatsu ba'aretz v'lo kodem l'chein. So when I say that these species only become prohibited when they start walking on the ground. Normally, I love the Rambam, although he likes the Ramban better usually. But he says, normally, like the Rambam, I'm ignoring him over here. So I normally follow him. That it even applies when they just walk on the surface of the fruit as opposed to being inside the fruit, or when they, well, let's say it has wings or something and just flew into the air and then went back into the fruit and didn't walk on the ground. So Rama says that's also concluded in the prohibition. How could that be the case? And the Mesugi and Masaychus Chulin, Shishar Sam Inyan Zebeteku. So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. What about this situation? What about this situation? What about this situation? One of them is when it goes into the air. One is it when it goes onto the surface of the fruit. So, boy, Rav Yosef, perisha lavir haola mahu. What if it just goes to the air? Agabe tomorrow mahu. If it goes on the surface of the fruit, and then it ends up with a teiku. So it's only a suffig. It's only a doubtful whether this is in fact prohibited or not. Obviously, we go when we have a principle of suffig yisur lechumra, that when there's a teiku in the Gemara that talks about, that relates to a ritual prohibition, we go stringently. So obviously, we have to go stringently, but for him to consider this to be the main point of the mitzvah, the Sefer Chinuch finds very difficult. Within the main purview of the mitzvah. So he seems to contradict himself in the Mishneh Torah from what he says in the Sefer HaMitzvos. I'm not going according to him over here. I'm just saying what's true. That it's only the only one, the only main thing that we know for sure is a part of the purview of this mitzvah is when it walks on the ground. Or while on the fruit, while it's still attached to the ground. The Ramban has a long essay over there in the Sefer HaMitzvos where he does not like this at all.
The Ramban?
The Ramban does not like the Ramban's shita, yeah. Bishoshi HaMitzvah Kasav Nulamala. Again, the reasoning is because we want to get rid of, we don't want to go to these things that have anything to do with these things that are detrimental in some way. Dineha. The halachos kigon ma'ash amru zichron al mivracha shoreitz al haaretz. So what does it mean that we prohibited stuff that creeps on the ground? Lahotzi zizin sheba adoshim v'tolaim sheba klusim, that these types of bugs that live in the fruit, umin kiddis, whatever type of a legume that is, v'tolaim sheba tamarim v'grogros. So when you're drying, for example, you're drying dates and you're drying figs on the roof of your house, they're not attached to the ground anymore, so they could develop worms. The worms are obviously, we know that the worms are, that the eggs are actually laid before at some point, but they only hatched, they only became wormy when they were already drying, they were on the roof of your house and this baking in the sun. So that would be permissible. So again, the principle is that bugs that developed in the fruit after it was detached from the ground and did not even go to the surface of the fruit, they stayed inside the fruit the whole time, are allowed. Sheinim belavs at the shoritz al haaretz, because they didn't creep on the Torah only prohibits if they creep on the ground. V'hayu mutarin min adin. So really, the strict halacha is that they're allowed. Ela sheyesh bo chelosan shikutz lanefesh ktsas. He says, it's still a little gross to go ahead and eat them. Which is, the Torah says over here, lo tishaktu es nafshoseichem, do not make yourselves disgusting, which the rabbis, the chazal, said was not, they darshaned it, they interpreted it, and again, it's not a daraisa necessarily, but if they interpreted this to refer that you shouldn't do disgusting things. So you say, the Gemara says a few times, you do X, you're over on bal tishaktu, not mi daraisa. Bal tishaktu is just referring to eating bugs, things that are disgusting, but it's something like this: the eating bugs that are permissible, since they're kind of gross in the fruit, and certainly if you take it, whatever. But the another thing, disgusting things are you're not allowed to. One example is you're not allowed to hold yourself in when you have to go to the bathroom. Another example is you're not supposed to drink out of vessels that are used for non-food purposes, such as they used to have little cups that they used to use for bloodletting. So even if you wash it out, it's still like, ugh, to drink from cups that are used for bloodletting, so you're not supposed to do that either. So this is a general principle, midrabban, you're not supposed to do things that are disgusting. But again, but these things, since they're really permissible, it doesn't mean you have to go looking for them intensely, as you know we do. Can you close the door, by the way, please? As we do for bugs that are really prohibited in produce. But if you know it's there and you see it, and it's shouldn't just go. You shouldn't just pop it in your mouth again.
Wait, does that mean you're supposed to check?
Yesh bedavar safek im nasu atoloyim baperos kodem shenekru acharkein. So there are a lot of, you don't necessarily know when the fruit or vegetable developed insects. So if you don't know, and there's a chance that it could be when it was attached to the ground, and those are really asar midaraisa, those insects. So jivdoka usamyasa, so there's a requirement to check the fruit or vegetable very carefully, says Yofa.
But don't you?
We'll see, 1 second. Vimhem dakim me'od ad she'enu yachol livdok, so if there's so little that you can't check it properly. Yashe osan yudbeiz chodesh. So let them sit around for 12 months. V'achar kach mutarim lechol lechatchila belo bedika. Then you can eat it without it checking it. So after 12 months, it's considered that it probably disintegrated. It's not going to preserve it. So if you don't, so perush einu miskayim kolomer shemikevan shavur alav yud beis chodesh shariyo ka'afar gomer. It just turns into ash, dirt. It's not really an insect anymore. So these types of dates, if you will leave them for 12 months, then they're permissible. So that's the Chinuch's interpretation. However, Rashi says that that actually just means that if it still had the... It doesn't mean that the bug disintegrates. It's just that if the bug's still around after 12 months, it means it couldn't possibly have begun its life cycle while the fruit was still attached to the tree, because it wouldn't last, it wouldn't have lived that long after the fruit was plucked. That's Rashi's interpretation against the Chinuch. So this is very interesting over here. It talks about that insects that are too small to check for. So what does that mean? We know we have a principle. No, it's the Chinuch, right now. Right, the Chinuch says, so we know we have a principle called Lo Nitna Torah Lemalachei Hasharis. The Torah was not given to the angels on high. The Torah is given to humans and has to be something that's possible and reasonable for a human to observe without resorting to crazy things. So
you don't need a microscope or...
Right, so the prohibition against tolaim, against prohibited insects, is limited to ones that are visible with the naked eye to people with normal vision. And if you have...
What is normal?
Average, the average person, if they can see it with their...
In other words, if you need glasses, don't take them off to check.
Right. But if you you have very poor eyes and you have you hold the fruit over here, I don't see anything. No, that's not acceptable. It has to be something that's actually you can't see. But he says over here, there are certain situations where if they're hard to find. So it depends how good your vision is, how hard to find it is. We'll discuss more in a second, but there are situations where they're not easily seen, and you still have to check for them. I'm not sure, because there are certain situations. It could be that our preservation is better nowadays. The Poskim, the Shulchan Aruch also talks about when there is, if you have something that you keep for 12 months, but it contains honey or a preservative, since honey preserves things in it, so if it takes, so it might preserve it for 12 months.
Preserve the bug?
Yeah, preserve the bug.
Instead of letting it disintegrate.
Right. Hmm. Yeah.
160s, something like that?
No, the 60 does not apply over here. But, if you... again, if there's a fruit that's you know is heavily infested, so that doesn't necessarily work, but if there's something that's... If there's a fruit or vegetable that's usually not infested, it's rare for it to be infested, and you have a batch that looks fresh and good and nice, and there's no reason to assume it's infested. You check a couple because it might be infested. So then that's reasonable to assume that the rest are not infested. But if you have, but if it's more infested, then it's more of a problem.
If it's heavily infested, you wouldn't find 4 or 5 or 6. I don't know.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. Your idea is good. But the thing over here is also there's a major machlokas regarding insects that are visible, but are not easily recognizable as insects. So let's say you have...
That's like the water.
We'll get to the water in a minute, yeah. So if you have a, let's say you open a fruit, or and you see a black dot, you clearly see it. No question, normal vision, you see the black dot. And if you would look at it with a microscope, or if you would consult with an insect specialist, he could tell you, yes, this is an insect. You could clearly, but you don't see the legs and the antenna, you just see, all you see is a black dot. That's subject to a major disagreement amongst the poskim, whether that's considered visible or not. It was very interesting. In terms of the water, Reb Usher Weiss has a tshuva that's printed in his commentary on the Chumash, actually. So he's very independent. He's in poskim in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't. He's an interesting guy. So he's Hasidish, but he goes to Teaneck frequently. He's very tight with a lot of the people there. Interesting. So he writes that something that is clearly visible to the naked eye but not visible as an insect, we should be stringent if you see it, but we should not necessarily need to be stringent that it's considered to be a beria, to be a full insect, to the extent that it would not be batal, which we'll see in a few minutes. There are halachos regarding whether a full creature, like we saw in the Yerchai of Malkus, if you eat a full creature, so we'd see too that if it gets mixed into something, so it's not batal either. The normal rules of 160 don't apply. So he says, basically his compromise is that you can consider it to be batal, but you can't, if you see it with your, that it's present, then you have to be stringent, yeah? Rav Asher Weiss's opinion?
Yeah.
He says that you should be stringent if you see a dot that you know to be a bug, even if you can't tell it's in there, but it's not. But it would still be not subject to the rules of beria, and would be, if it got mixed into something and you couldn't find it, then it would be subject to the normal rules of bittul 1 in 60. Mm-hmm. As opposed to what I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, because he's going to talk about that in a few minutes, the rule that if there's a whole creature, then it's not nullified. Another point that the poskim make is that the rule of not visible to the naked eye does not apply if the only reason you can't see it is because of the background. That if it's a green insect on a piece of lettuce, for example, then that it's still bug is intrinsically considered to be visible, and that would be a problem. But yeah, so you have to
just.
But
how do you check? Like, how would you find that?
You have to check carefully. You have to be more. Not a microscope. You'll use a light box. You have to use. If you're looking for black insects on lettuce, so you might not have to use light box again. Or look at it. The postgame obviously don't discuss light boxes. The classical postgame talk about looking at it in the sun. But if you know, again, but we'll discuss in a few minutes how much you have to be worried from a suffix point of view. That if actually we'll discuss it now. So the in terms of checking also. So the postgame talking about there's a difference between if something is muchzak betoloim, as I mentioned before, that if you know that something is the majority of the time has insects present,
like lettuce,
that's called a miut hamotsui, that if it's there is some chance that there are bugs present, that you only have to check midrabanan, or maybe it's not even a real din derabanan, but that's the
there's a list.
Right, exactly.
Where they say these, you always have to check these, you don't.
Yeah, so the question is, what's a miut hamotzoi? What's considered to be this threshold of something that you have to check for? So some poskim say it's close to half the time that bugs are found in it, which is a big gula. There are poskim who state that. The Mishkanis Yankov, who was a rabbi who lived in Lithuania in the 19th century, so he said that he has a whole long chew about it. So one thing he suggests over there is he brings a proof that it's 10% of the time. Okay, that's a commonly accepted opinion, although that might be too much of a stringency. Some other poskim say that really there is no statistical analysis of miut hamotzoi. It just means that if it's something, if you ask people, if they say, oh yeah, that vegetable always has bugs, so that's muchzak betolaim, if they say, oh, you know, occasionally we do find bugs. So that's a miut hamotzoi. And if they say, no, we hardly ever, no. That would be like, very rare that we'd find bugs. And that's considered to be assumed to be clean and you don't need to check it. Yeah?
So what if you soak it, let you have?
Let's go one by one. So one thing that we have to keep in mind is that the vegetables, fruits and vegetables are not absolute things. That, you know, we have lists, we have books written in Israel that describe how to check certain fruits and vegetables. So they say, you know, this vegetable is muhzak, this vegetable is usually infested, this vegetable is sometimes infested, this vegetable is assumed to be clean, which does not necessarily apply to America. Rabbi Willig is big on this. Some people said that he said he gets hacked a lot because the Vad of Riverdale is very lenient about standards of checking fruits and vegetables. He said, yeah, because the Hashgacha insists that they have to get grade A, you know, USDA certified grade A, the best produce. So that produce, if you get lettuce from Costco, it's very different from getting lettuce from organic farm and who knows where.
On the contrary, organic farms probably have more.
Right, they do. Elsa, pest. I mean, question is whether you want to go to hell or you want to die from the pesticides. So have to be. no, but seriously. So Rabbi Willig is very big on this. He said that it depends very much on the quality of the produce in terms of whether it has to be assumed to be infested or not. He said one time some students of his went to an OU presentation, and they were saying, oh, how you have to check broccoli and you have to check cauliflower and all these things. So then the presenter proceeded to take a head of broccoli and, you know, soaked it and said, you know, and that were for sure broccoli, we're going to have bugs. And lo and behold, he couldn't find any bugs. So the people, these Talmidim of Rabbi Willig said, then they said, great, this is all a myth. You know, broccoli doesn't really have bugs in it. This is fantastic. So they went home and they bought some heads of broccoli on St. Nicholas Avenue. And they went home. It was full of the bugs. So it was completely infested. So the answer is that the OU presenters, unfortunately, which didn't really make their case, used grade A high quality broccoli. And it didn't have to be very high-quality produce. So you have to know. You have to know what the mitzvah is. But a lot of times it can be assumed to be free of bugs or just needs a cursory inspection as opposed to a more thorough type of situation. So it's a question. If something's really infested, even soaking it might not necessarily take care and might not find all the bugs. But we'll get to in a few minutes why even that there might be reason to be lenient when we get to this discussion about bittul. Oh yeah, v'im perushu talei haperus la'avir v'lo nagu ba'aretz. So let's say they just went straight. Kigon shiatsu min apri v'nofu l'soch piv shel ochel. They went straight from the fruit. You're holding the fruit over your mouth, and this bug jumps into your mouth from directly from the fruit when it was mutter, when it was inside the fruit. V'chein im perushu v'rochshu al gabei hapri. So let's say if it went on top of the surface. V'im nodin gav hapri kimo ha'aretz. Maybe the top of the fruit, even if it was attached from the ground, is like the ground. Or maybe when it was already dead, it walked on the ground. It went to the ground, so it didn't walk on the ground. It just fell onto the ground. That's all those when we're talking about in the discussion in Masechet Chulin that ends up in a teiku. So these are all considered to be forbidden because of the doubt that's raised in the Gemara. So we have to decide. We can't decide whether it's really considered to be sharitz al haaretz, is karipi on the ground. And that would be, so still we have to be, practically speaking, we have to be stringent.
So what do you do in the case where it like jumps into your mouth?
Spit it out. V'chein ma'ashamr zichron of l'vracha. What? V'chein ma'ashamr zichron of l'vracha. She'toloim ha'nimtsoim bim'ei hadogim asurim mishum sheretz. This is also a big, there's also a big controversy nowadays.
To the side of the...
Right, kimi b'chut same b'im. So let's say you find bugs inside fish. So, if they are found in the digestive tract, then they are forbidden. Why? Because it's assumed that the fish ingested them from the outside, and therefore they didn't, because if they grew, if they spontaneously generated, or they hatched from eggs, when the eggs were already inside the fish, the flesh of the fish, then it would be okay.
But here, eat the digestive tract of a fish? Don't you pull that out when you clean it?
If you want to, you may. You don't have to. You may eat the digestive tract of fish if you want to. Aval hanimtsoim behen bein or labasar o besocha basar mutarin. But if they're found between the skin of the fish and the flesh of the fish, or within the flesh, they're mutar, because they're assumed to have generated, whatever that means, from the flesh of the fish and not have migrated from the outside. So this was a major controversy a couple years ago regarding wild salmon, because it didn't apply to farmed salmon. This was a major issue because they discovered these bugs, anisakis, in wild fish.
Because they were, and they were some, the problem was, they were some of the anisakis were in the digestive tract, and some of the anisakis were in the flesh of the fish. So what are you going to do over here? We had a sort of a contradictory analysis of the fish, of the worm, because some of the, you could see it was the same thing in the digestive tract and the flesh, so it seems to be pretty reasonable that they migrated from the digestive tract into the flesh of the fish, that it was obvious. Just by opening the fish, you could see it was the same type. So whether it should be subject to this rule. So this...
It doesn't, like, hurt the crawling through your skin.
Okay, so this shaila was brought to the attention of the major poskim in Eretz Yisrael, and the poskim in Eretz Yisrael said that since you can see, obviously, that it's the same type of worm that clearly migrated from the digestive tract, the poskim, there are proofs for this in the languages, the way the turns of phrase where the Rishonim describe this issue of the worms in the fish, that if you know, it's only if you know that they developed in the flesh of the fish, but if there's a concern that they developed in the intestines and then migrated to the flesh of the earth between the skin and the flesh or whatever, then it is prohibited. So based on this, most of the Israeli poskim ruled that one should be stringent and not eat the anisakis worm that develops inside these wild fish. Unless it's what you call muhzak. Unless you assume that wild fish is muhzak in tolaim, so you gotta look for it. You can't just look away from it. But if you don't see it...
Do you assume that?
Well, I'm saying like how...
Probably,
how deep,
if
like
you're
how
worried
how
about the anisakis.
How many slices do you have to cut and know where they're found?
Yeah, you gotta know. If it's really muhzak, if it's not, then maybe there's more room to be makel. But in any case, the Israeli poskim said that yes, the anisakis worm that lived in the flesh of the fish is not the what the Gemara is talking about over here when it says worms that developed in the flesh. So this opinion was very much promulgated by Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp, who's called the appropriately named Rabbi Karp, as it was in some articles written about him. So he wrote very strongly that it should be forbidden. And okay, but this opinion, he wrote a kuntris called La Frushe Meisura to get people away from doing a violation. And he published it between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He said, look, I'm really busy, but this is a really important topic, so I decided to write this whole essay about the fish to make clear that it's prohibited. And he says what he's especially astonished by is that there are what we call mahadrin hechsherim. There are certain hechsherim, which are relied upon by the general community, which still give a hechsher to this fish, even if it has the anisakis worm. He says, even if they hold it's permitted, then it doesn't matter, because they're going for the general, when they say something is kosher lemahadrin, so without any questions, when people consume that product, they assume they're getting something that's permitted according to the consensus of the great poskim. That even if they hold that it's okay, it's still not proper to give a hechsher to it. So that was his 2 points. He also pointed out that there is an opinion of the Rambam that you're only allowed to eat, that the only permitted worms that grow in fish are worms that grow in the fish after the fish is dead. So
you're not going to eat a live fish.
No, but the worm has to grow in the fish after it's dead. You don't know. So these for sure, the anisakis worms grow while the fish is alive. So he says...
Assume not, because you don't keep fish that long. Otherwise, it would spoil.
Right, you assume that you normally... Salted fish, for example. If worms grow in salted fish, then that would be permissible according to Rambam. I don't know. So the... he says that even if, so still, you have the opinion of the Rambam, wherein the Shach, I believe he quotes, writes that it's proper to be stringent for the opinion of the Rambam, even though the Shulchan Aruch assumes that that's not the main opinion. The main opinion is that, as we stated before, that any worm that grows in the flesh of the fish is okay. Well, so this opinion was very much not accepted by the poskim in America. Poskim in America felt that this... They spoke to the experts on fish and fish pathologies. So they said, no, these are the worms that have always been growing in fish. This is what the Gemara is talking about, that when it's found in the flesh of the fish, that you assume that that it grew inside the flesh of the fish, which, again, is a little bit questionable, because here we have clear evidence of the migration. But he said, this is what the Gemara is talking about, so this is it. This is a hashkafic problem also that Rabbi Slifkin pointed out, that if he says that if you want to start saying, if you want to start analyzing where this worm really came from, so you have to start reanalyzing all of the halachos of Chazal about bugs and where they come from, and to see whether we should go according to the scientific understanding nowadays. But I don't know if that's so clear, because if there's, again, if this is exactly the same bug for sure that what Chazal is talking about, then you have this halashgafic problem. But if there were other bugs, or there were, you know, we have clear evidence that they migrated from the digestive tract to the flesh, so then it's questionable. Yeah,
you should also, there's very complicated life cycles, I recall.
So the OU is still lenient on this. They give a hechsher to, for example, canned salmon, a variety, but in the cans, can you really find the Anisakis worms? That's what I'm wondering about. So that's, like, are they, could, be, perhaps, I mean, are,
the
might
OU
they be...
is also what gives the hechsher put off by...
I understand, okay, I'm saying there. But cans might be a little better, because, although I spoke to Rav Karp, and he specifically said that the main issue is the cans, but I don't know, it's in terms of the canning process, it also probably, in terms of the steaming, the worms might get broken up, or, you know, when they're processed. I've never found a worm in the, again, I don't know if I've been looking hard enough, but it's something, and then you mash it up, so that's another reason to be lenient. That's true. Well, guys, we'll get to next time more. But if they're found in the stomachs of an animal, they're usur. So any worm that's found in an animal, even if it may have developed inside the animal, it's still usur. If you ain shum davar ba behema she mutar ba lo shkita, vehein einan b'nei shkita. So, for example, the reason that it's mutar in the worms, in the fish, is because fish don't need shkita. So since the worms develop, according to the understanding of Chazal, from the flesh of the fish, so therefore, when you kill the fish and you're going to eat it, so the worms become mutar because they're just considered to be part of the fish. But that doesn't help you with an animal, because if a worm develops inside the animal, in order to permit the animal to be for consumption, you need to shecht it. And the shechita does not relate to the worms. So therefore, the worms remain prohibited, and it doesn't matter if they develop from the flesh of the animal.
So if you shechted the worms individually...
No, you can't. No. Very funny. The Ochatoa ribsa oson leser. So there's a drusha that says that even though there's a svara that, would, according to our understanding, would assume they'd be prohibited anyway. You shall be disgusted with their dead bodies. Larabos deron in shabab behema. Since there's so many extra languages in the Torah, extra turns of phrase that prohibit nevelas. So one of the Chazal assume that one of them might refer to the worms that develop inside the animal. So it's both a pasuk, a drasha, and a svara, a analysis as to why they should be usher. V'im tomar shliel echo mutter below shchita. So you're going to ask the kasha on me. How can a fetus of an animal be mutter if you shech the mother? So then you can eat the fetus because the shchita works for the fetus. So he said, no, this develops within the animal. It should need its own shchita, or maybe shchita shouldn't work. Since it says kol ba behema tochelu, you can eat anything in the animal. So when it's an animal, part of an animal, then the shchita of the mother helps for it. But if it's if it's an organism that's not related to the animal per se, then they remain prohibited, and the shchita doesn't help for it, and you can't check the worms, so therefore they remain prohibited.